The following podcast contains strong language and adult themes and is intended for mature audiences. Listener discretion is advised. Heinke Digital presents. Damocles, an audiobook podcast by Christian Heinke. Chapter 7, The Glass. Eventually, my eyes fluttered open. I was in a state of confusion. Darkness surrounded me, suggesting that I had been transported back into the stream. I struggled against the weight of my body. With an audible grunt, I rolled onto my side. Sitting in a lotus position next to me was Siv, dressed in a simple gray robe with her hair pulled back in a tight braid. Her lack of makeup did not diminish her natural beauty. "Am I alive?" I asked. "I can't say for certain," she responded, "but at least your mind remains intact." And then it hit me like a freight train. Simon was gone. My dear friend Simon had been ruthlessly murdered. The weight of his loss weighed on me, a heavy burden that threatened to break me.
"Selma killed my friend. She killed Simon."
"I'm sorry for your loss, Joseph. Simon Haddad was an honorable man."
"Yeah, he was," I replied.
"But you're still alive, Joseph. There's still something you can do. Remember how you could monitor the enemy? Perhaps you can reclaim that now."
"How am I supposed to do that? Last time it just happened."
"Visualize the place you wish to see." I closed my eyes, shutting out the darkness, and summoned forth an image of Sam. With a surge of determination, I refocused and projected my desires into the abyss. In an instant, the darkness gave way to a dusty storage room dimly lit. A worn-out blanket lay scattered on the floor, providing a makeshift bed for Sam. Beside it, a bowl of food and water sat, offering meager sustenance.
"It's going to be all right, Sam," I murmured, my voice barely audible.
Defying logic, I smoothly passed through the closed door undeterred. I stepped out into a dirty corridor. It seemed to be somewhere underground. Rough concrete formed the walls. Theoretically, I could be anywhere. I felt like I had been here before. It took me a moment to sift through my memory. Then I remembered. Of course. I had been in the place where the boy and the man in the shadows held the Goldschmidt's two daughters captive. If I was clever enough, maybe I could find out where this place was in the real world and free the girls. I floated along the corridor. It had doors positioned on both sides. Behind the doors seemed to be offices and lab rooms. At least that's what the door signs next to the doorframe showed. The doorframes had faded signs next to them, which were partly yellowed. It smelled moldy and musty. Mold shimmied along the walls and ceiling. Before I could wonder how I could smell anything in such a vision, one door opened. A woman in a lab coat stepped out. I was standing in the middle of the hallway, quite an exposed position. The woman was holding an old-fashioned clipboard. I held my breath. She was coming toward me. I looked left and right, but I saw no way to hide. She studied me, but she did not react to my presence. At the last moment, I realized she was not looking at me, but looking through me. Then she just walked right through where I was. As her head passed through mine, I had flashes of images from her head in front of my eyes for a moment. She was having an affair with one guard, and her name was Lynn Parker. She wondered why that pompous German would want to get this place up and running again. It was smelly and dark. It would be weeks before they could do any kind of decent work here. And these girls, well, she was well rewarded and focused on her own affairs. But these girls didn't seem to be volunteering for any tests. The woman stopped behind me as if she sensed I had taken a peek into her mind. She shook herself, then she continued walking. I had just picked up dozens of thought images, so I was left to sort through them. Affair, guards, German guy, working on something. The girls, tests.
What goddamn test?
The lights flashed on. For a moment, through the colored dots and the after image of the flash, I saw Siv crouching next to me. Someone shone a small flashlight into my eyes.
"Ah, good, you're awake," said a woman's voice.
I blinked and saw that the woman was Lynn Parker, who had just passed through me in the hallway.
"Lynn?" I croaked. How do you know my name? Asked Lynn, startled. You were unconscious the whole time, weren't you? I sat up, groaning. I was on a hospital gurney. Other gurneys lined both my right and left sides. It was a kind of laboratory. Like the corridor, this laboratory was dirty. Someone had cleaned it in a makeshift way. It stank musty and damp. Now the smell of disinfectants only overlaid this smell. It smelled foul, like in a mismanaged hospital. I tried to position myself in an upright manner. The lab turned a little vertical. Lynn had recovered from the shock of my personal address. Wow, slow down. You've been unconscious for almost a whole day. Just relax. I grabbed her arm. Hey, you're hurting me. I heard her words in German, but her lips moved in English. So the universal translator in my implant was still working. Lynn, someone murdered the parents of the girls. Your employer will stop at nothing. What tests are you running on them, Lynn? Bridget, help! Screamed Lynn.
Take it easy. I'm already here, Dr. Parker,
the woman named Bridget said. Suddenly, I felt myself letting go of Lynn without my doing. You have already experienced the demon mode, Mr. Lenka. Sit back and enjoy the show. The woman purred in my thoughts.
Look, Dr. Parker, everything is all right. Now the old fart will eat out of your hand if you wish.
Bridget bellowed from a scratchy little speaker above the door. Dr. Parker adjusted her glasses. Thank you, Bridget, she said, smiling gently at me. Her eyes didn't smile at that. See, that's much better. Now be a nice boy. She approached me and whispered in my ear, Otherwise, I'll ask Bridget to order you to shit your pants. Got it? Fuck you, you fucking bitch, I thought.
I think he understands,
Bridget told Dr. Parker over the loudspeaker. The examination, which I attended only as a spectator, reminded me of my medical examination for the police service. That was 51 years ago. Dr. Parker was perhaps half as old, but the stupid thing about these bastards was that they always grew back, like weeds. Dr. Parker moved me into the wheelchair with Bridget's help. I guess that was more efficient than having Bridget guide me with strings. I suppose Bridget could have made me boogie in this demon mode. If Bridget's database even knew the expression boogie, I felt old and helpless. I guess that's why such old phrases were running through my head. Dr. Parker pushed me out of the lab with the tables and into the hallway with the wheelchair. At the end of the hall, we reached an elevator. The outside doors had scratches and dirt on them. The interior of the lift was another story. It gleamed with pristine newness. A dark metal mirror formed the back wall. I saw myself and Dr. Parker, a slobbering elderly man in a wheelchair and a young, attractive woman with glasses and a lab coat. I looked awful. I looked like I wanted to die, and that made me think of Simon. You fucking bitches, you're going to pay for this. Dr. Parker noticed a tear streaming down my cheek. Bridget, what's the matter with Mr. Lenka?
He's thinking of an old friend who is no longer with us.
Well, that's not at all unusual at your age. Oh, you poor old man. If I could do anything I wanted to do, this poor old man would love to kick your ass right now. I felt a slight warm trickle in my pants. Behave, Mr. Lenka, or I'll make you shit your pants like a helpless baby, Bridget warned. I gritted my teeth to keep from screaming. I had to think about these new fancy nursing homes that were popping up these days. How many retired patients sitting there had genuinely faced a shutdown due to an assistive system activating demon mode? Fewer than you might think, Mr. Lenka. Assistance systems are reserved for a very exclusive clientele. Thanks for the info, bitch. I waited for my bladder to empty, but Bridget didn't want to inconvenience Dr. Parker with the smell. The elevator had no buttons, like it was really new, and like modern elevators, artificial intelligence controlled it. Just like me now. The elevator doors slid open again. We had only gone up a few floors. Dr. Parker pushed me out. We were in an office. It, like the decaying lab floor, was underground. The back wall made it look like we were in a tall tower somewhere above the clouds. It was a mirage. An enormous desk of dark wood stood in front of the wall. It was a desk that would have fit in the Reich Chancellery, way too big and way too martial. The table held only a carafe of water and two glasses. It stood on a carpet that looked expensive, but which I would not buy for myself for all the money in the world because of the ugly pattern. Dr. Parker pushed me to the edge of the rug and left me there. Then she walked out and got on the lift. I sat there for a while. I suppose that's what they expected me to do. For about 5 minutes, nothing happened. Then the leather chair behind the desk slowly turned around. In it sat the boy. "Hello, Chief Inspector," he greeted me. I don't know what I was expecting. I might meet the ominous entrepreneur who had already killed 10 people, but there was just the boy again, the second assistant system. He wore a slim-fitting dark suit again and a blue silk shirt under it. He looked like someone who would dominate the conversation at any party and whom I would therefore avoid. An asshole. No. He looked like the spoiled little son of an asshole. I stared at him. I wasn't capable of much else at the moment. The boy looked at me, then he got it. "Oh, like that, sure, demon mode, my bad." He snapped his finger and I was back in control of my body, at least from the neck up. Okay. The boy wasn't stupid. I knew that this paralysis was only because of the demon mode, but I still had to fight against giving in to total panic. I hated the fact that I was losing more and more control over my body as the years went by. That was just part of getting older. But what if I had to spend the rest of my life like this? Paralyzed in a wheelchair, vulnerable to assholes like the little boy in front of me? I pushed these thoughts away again. Obviously, the boy was expecting me to say something. "Water," I said in a half whisper. With a nod of my head, I pointed to the carafe of water. "Great cue," the boy said. His voice was unique, but also somehow familiar. He meandered around the desk, which was a lengthy endeavor due to its substantial dimensions. Then he leaned against the desk next to the carafe and the glasses. He looked at me. "You look like shit, Chief Inspector," I nodded. "I know, please, water." "Oh," the boy said. "I want to show something to it." He shrugged. "Well, what the heck, it's just a little water." He poured some water into one glass and handed it to me. "Bridget, help him drink," the boy ordered. My hand took the glass and, as if controlled by puppet strings, brought it to my mouth. I eagerly took a few sips. Then my hand dropped again. The little boy took the glass from me and placed it with the unused glass in the carafe. "Thank you," I said. And I meant it. I hated myself for it. "That Bridget. She took the part of Selma, right?" "Not bad, Lenka. That's right. We thought you would pick Bridget when you went to see the otaku. But we were mistaken. So Bridget had to improvise, and she took the place of Selma. What a shame." "What do you mean?" "Bridget had to retire the real Selma to take over. Her digital remains were behind the dune." "Another body for your account." "Au contraire. This body is on your account. You were just too cheap, old man." I fell silent. "And why is this Bridget now taking orders from another assistant?" I asked. The boy tried to understand what I meant. Then he laughed. "You think I'm an assistant too? Because of Yarvin? That's funny, Lenka." "You're not the boy?" I asked, confused. "That's what you call my assistant? Boy?" His assistant? What did he mean by that? He approached me, then he held my chin. "I'm the original old man." He patted my cheek, then he wiped his hand with his handkerchief. He took a lighter out of his pocket. From his inside pocket, he took out a silver case. From it, he took out a cigarillo. He lit the cigarillo with the lighter. He inhaled the smoke and blew it out. "My name is Paul Sherber. Bridget and Yarvin are my assistants." "So you're the asshole responsible for my friend's death. How old are you, 19? "Unlike you, I appear younger. I'm already 25 years old. What do you want from me?" "To be honest, I don't know yet. I already got what I wanted." "The silver box." "Exactly." He shook his head. "Goldschmidt and his stupid conscience. I would have bought him a goddamn island if he'd played ball. Hell, I would have made him ambassador to Australia or something." "Well, you seem to do pretty well. Why do you risk all that by killing innocent people?" "How am I supposed to understand that, Chief Inspector Lenka?" "Well, you just kill people as you see fit. Eventually, you will have to answer for it." Sherber stared at me, stunned. Then he held his hand with the cigarillo in front of my nose. "You see, therefore I typically avoid talking to ordinary people. You're also so, well, ordinary. Do you find obeying the law tedious? Where you live, down there in the dumpster, there's law and order. Where I live, jungle law applies, man. Is it true you killed a cleaner because your kid moved a chair with wet legs? The little fucker hurt himself. I'm disinterested in this child. It's unlikely that I can do anything with him for a few years. But my wife is already very fond of him. She's a model. Very hot. We had a surrogate, of course. I didn't want everything to wear out down there with her. Does your wife know you're a killer? What, that I retired the cleaning lady? Yes, of course. She wanted it that way. How much noise she would have made if I hadn't taken care of her. And she didn't mind. Why should she? Do you know how much personnel we've retired? You've killed more people? Sure. How many? I don't know, Bridget. How many people have I retired? As of today, 1,703. You are insane. Sherber shook his head. It is really not possible to discuss such things with you ordinary people. You are so small-minded. I'd rather be a small-minded person than a mass murderer. You talk as if the death of one of those people matters. Of course it does. Every human life matters. Wrong, Lenka, quite wrong. You are arguing again with your ideas from the dumpster. I'll explain it to you. Now comes the demonstration. He took one glass from the table and filled it halfway with water. What is that, Lenka? A half-full glass of water? Ah, an optimist. I love optimists. You can kick their ass 100 times and they'll pick themselves up and find a reason to go back to the helm of the galley. But here's the quiz. Which is more important, the water or the glass? What do you mean? People always argue about whether the glass is half full or half empty. But the real question should be, what makes it possible to argue about whether it's half empty or half full? The glass? Exactly. We, the rich and powerful, are the glass. Do you understand? We don't give a shit if the glass is half full or if it is half empty, as long as it is all happening in our glass. What do you want from me? I told you, I don't know yet. You pushed a button? You shouldn't have. Only a privileged circle of chosen ones may press that button. But now you're in. Because of my upgrade? Exactly. You are no longer a simple policeman from Bochum. You are now a super top checker bunny. A what? Oh, an old term. I thought you would like it if I tried to communicate in your language, old man. What do you want with the Goldschmidt girls? I asked. What do you mean? At first, you use them as insurance to get Emmanuel Goldschmidt and his wife to do your bidding. But now I hear you're conducting experiments on them. Little Dr. Parker must have been talking to you. I could just say that I had the means to activate the override mode in my implant. I had to get out of here, so I couldn't reveal that. But I was afraid that this crazy boy wonder would hurt Dr. Parker. But she was volunteering for Sherber, so I considered her an enemy. Shouldn't she have told me? I asked naively. It doesn't really matter. You will participate in the same experiments. You want to bypass the lock on the silver box and allow multiple upgrades on one implant, right? Exactly. But you've already done that. You have 2 support systems working for you. That only works with a trick. I had a second implant put in with me. You can do that? I thought it would drive you crazy. Not exactly, but it is uncomfortable. So uncomfortable that I would rather not have a third implant. But if I can get around the lock in the silver box, then I can link as many servant spirits as I want to my implant. To accomplish what? Well, it takes imagination, old man. He took the water glass from his demonstration and dipped his finger into it. But since you are just a sip of water, I'm afraid you don't understand. I wanted to answer something, about a jug that goes to the well. But Sherber snapped his fingers, and the lights went out on me again. I was back in the dark in-between world of the stream. Next to me, Siv was still squatting in the lotus seat. Hello, Joseph, she greeted me with her eyes closed. Hello. In the dimly lit room, my voice echoed softly. Once again, I lay on my back. As I turned my head, I extended my arms and legs. I couldn't help but let out a groan of relief. In this virtual reality, I regained the feeling in my limbs. I finally got myself up and tried to fix my disheveled hair. My attempt was unsuccessful. but it didn't matter in this in-between world anyway. Siv opened her eyes and looked at me. You look terrible. That's exactly how I feel. Did you have a conversation with Paul Scherber? That's right. You always feel drained afterward. He's not a nice person. That's one way of putting it. How would you put it? A spoiled neoliberal fascist boy who likes to hear himself talk. Yeah, that fits, said Siv. We both had to laugh. Then the expression on Siv's face turned serious again. I'm afraid he's going to kill you, Joseph. Yes, I think so too, I said. If I let him, he will kill me and the girls too. Have you figured out where they are? Not really. I woke up in the real world in some kind of lab. It seems to have been unused for years. Now someone has reactivated it. Multiple gurneys. I guess they do experiments there. He uses the girls for that and also wants me to take part in those experiments, willingly or not. Did he tell you what he was trying to accomplish with these experiments? He wants to disable the lock on the silver box, which only allows one upgrade per brain at a time. I was afraid of something like that, Siv said, lowering her eyes. Is that even possible? I don't know. As far as I know, someone built that lock into the silver box for a reason. It was to prevent more than one soul from being deposited in the silver box. Keep in mind that the original function of the box was to be an emergency storage for the data of a brain of an android like me. The makers did not design it for the rich and powerful to use it to upgrade their implant. And mixing several of these brain data sets would cause what? I can only speculate as much as you. I suspect insanity and a psychosis are still the most harmless after effects. Presumably, the data becomes unusable and the mind decomposes. He's put in two implants. He seems to really want to go through with it. Okay, now I get it. So that's how he's had two assistance systems at his disposal. Alexa and Siri are not enough for him. Now he wants Cortana as well. What do you mean? It's an old-time joke. The first assistant systems were simple expert systems that you carried around in small devices at home or in your cell phone. They all came from different manufacturers and were based on different systems. I sighed and rubbed my eyes. After a bottle or two of red, Simon went on a lengthy lecture about that. You miss your friend, don't you? Of course. Then we should think about how to improve our situation. You're right, so what kind of hand do we have? I'm not sure. A bad one, I guess. Well, first there's the question of how you and I can even talk here in the stream. Shouldn't they lock you in the silver box? You're right, that's weird, I am. But I have the ability to communicate with you and therefore with the outside world. How did you do it last time? I had transferred parts of myself into the memory of Vincent, the scanning robot. Fortunately, Mr. Haddad had installed this second personality. What was his name? That Bob personality? Yes, that was his name. That enabled me to breach the robot's firewall effortlessly and transfer myself seamlessly into its memory. I raised my finger. Hold on, I whispered. What? When Simon died, Simon said something else to me. He said, think about Bo. I think what he meant by that was think of Bob. He was trying to give you a way to use the robot. Selma put Vincent out of commission as much as she and I were. But she doesn't know about Bob Vincent's alternate personality. Bob works autonomously, that's why we can talk here in the stream, and maybe you can do even more. What do you mean? You could connect with the robot's personality, then you can work with Bob to find the girls, and you might even escape. Well, how do I do that? I asked. First, we have to find out where the robot is. If we're unlucky, they didn't take it, and it's still in the penthouse suite in Egmond. Or maybe it's around here somewhere. All right, I said, and what do I have to do? I didn't open my eyes. I didn't have eyes. Bob, the alternate personality of Vincent, the scanning robot, had no eyes. But his receptor activated instantly. I saw the world turned 90 degrees. I was lying on my side with my squat robot body. Hello, said the robot. Hello, buddy. I'm Joseph, a friend of Simon's. Yeah, right. I'm Bob. Hello, Bob. Hello, Joseph. Where's Simon? Simon's not here right now, but he told me to say hello to you. Thank you. I'd like you to stand up, Bob. I'm lying on my side. That's right, Bob. Now I'd like you to get yourself back into an upright position. How do I do that? I've never been in this situation before, and my protocols for such an emergency don't seem in place. It didn't surprise me. Bob was already the second personality in the robot's memory. Then Siv had taken a part of his memory banks. That had likely overwritten some of the robot's logs. I hoped that among them were no logs that jeopardized the robot's operation. I'll make you a deal, Bob. I'll take the helm for you. You sit back and enjoy the show. That's an acceptable proposition. You seem to know your way around here better than I do. According to my GPS data, I am very far from the university library. Can you pinpoint the exact location? It looks like we are in an old industrial complex. Thanks, buddy, but I'll take it from here. I commanded the robot's servo motors to roll onto its side so that it could get into an upright position with the help of its mechanical arms. Then I looked around. I found myself in a kind of parking garage. A line of various electric cars and drone copters were standing in their parking bays. I spotted the elevator. I rolled toward it. It looked like it was some kind of freight elevator. It must have been used to transport heavy lab equipment to the lower floors in the past. Like the elevator I had used while sitting in a wheelchair, this one didn't have any buttons to push. However, there was a QR code a robot like Bob could interpret. It took me a moment to convert my desire to go to the lower floors into a command. Then a laser scanned the QR code. The freight elevator basket came up and its doors opened. I rolled into the car. Then the robot relayed a few beeping sounds. The elevator understood the cryptic commands. The doors closed again, and the elevator descended. So far, so good, I thought. Now I hoped this lab was like every other facility I knew, that there were plenty of service robots among whom Bob would not stand out. Just in time, it occurred to me it would make sense to disguise the identity of the robot. Fortunately, Siv had explained to me how I could do this. So now Bob was a service robot from the Miller Company of Washington, which had a service contract with Sherber Limited. The freight elevator stopped and the doors opened. The game was on. Thank you for listening. To learn more about Heinke Digital Audiobook Podcasts and its author, Christian Heinke, please visit heinke.digital.